Morning. This is the antler tutorial. We were moved from another room to this room. So I haven't had a chance to go through this room like I have the other room. So I hope everything works out nicely. These are real slides. They're LaTeX to PDF. So it'll actually work, and there's no silly animations and stuff. So, welcome to the introduction to Antler. My name's Clinton Roy, and I'm from Brisbane, and I'm here to help. The most important job I have in the community is the president of Humbug, which is Brisbane/Queensland's Unix group. We're a very old and staid Unix group, and I'm trying to kick some life into it. I currently work for CSIRO. My entire career has been in quasi-government researchy groups, so that's why I get to work on these sort of projects that don't actually directly do anything. I'm currently responsible for the software that controls some autonomous machines that we've got at CSIRO. So helicopters, submarines, trucks, mining trucks, big vehicles, bobcats and things. I've got one metric, how many people do we kill? And I try to keep that low. My most dangerous vehicle is a 20-ton mining truck that carries around 12 ton of molten aluminium in a crucible. And if you turn that too quickly, it does spill. So there's Antler. And there's AntlerWorks. Antler is the command line interface tool. AntlerWorks is the GUI that sits on top of it. Antler is a Java project. I don't do Java. So whenever I use Antler, it's always to generate some other language, and I use the other language. I also don't use GUIs. So AntlerWorks is a little bit special to me. And as I was doing these slides, I came across numerous bugs that I still haven't been able to pin down. A lot of them were Heisen bugs. You'd do it 5 times, and then you'd go to the bug report page, set everything up, go through the steps, and it'd be disappeared by then. So it's a lovely tool for doing this sort of tutorial stuff. I'm not quite sure if it's there yet for production use. So Antler, one of the most torturous acronyms you've ever seen. Another tool for language recognition. It's Alexa and parser generator. So with something like Bison, you've got to use two tools. So something like Flex or Lek to generate your Alexa. And then you use Bison or Yak to generate your parser. And then you've got to stitch them together. Antler is kind of special in that it can generate both your Alexa and your parser as one. So less input files, less messing around, less keeping things in sync. So, oh look, I've said it there. It's a substitute for both Lex and Yak in one. It's under a BSD style license, so you can, which is kind of important here because a lot of the time when you're using Bison, there's a build time dependency. A lot of the time with Antler, depending on which target language you're using, there's an actual runtime dependency. So the license here is a little bit more important than with Bison. It's BSD license, so I can use it anywhere. And from memory, I think Bison has a very similar use anywhere license for stuff that it generates. We're working towards a 3.1 release. It's been kind of scary the last couple of times I've given this talk that number changes every time we give the talk, so it's kind of useful. The reason that we haven't done a 3.1 release yet is that I'm here at this conference rather than working on the 3.1 release. So the main guy who started and works on Antler is Terence Parr from the University of Idaho, I think, in the States. He was out here recently. The guys that do Jira and Confluence, Atlassian. They use Antler internally, so they sort of helped him come out here and do a few talks and stuff. It wouldn't be an Antler talk without me pimping his book. It's a good book. I wouldn't recommend you buy it unless you're heavily doing lots of language generator stuff. But if you are, it's a very good book. You can get it on Amazon for cheap, or you can go get it from the publisher, Pragmatic Programs, and you can get just the PDF version. And I much prefer the PDF version. You get a free errata as well, as it's actually searchable. There's another book project on the way, which is more of a recipe project, and that's going to be similar to like the Python and the Perl recipes, where it'll all be online and it'll all be as a book. So I'd kind of wait for that one. Not that I'm dissing the book at all. So my involvement with this is in my previous job. I needed a little bit of a parsing solution. And for the one-day hack, PyParsing was an okay solution for me. But then when it quickly became obvious that it wasn't actually good enough to hit users with. So as long as the configuration file that you parsed PyParsing was syntactically correct, it would parse it. If it wasn't, it would barf and not give you any decent error messages. So, what do you use Antler for? I had to give this slide at OSDC, which is a web-based, that's a little harsh, but mostly a web-based applications conference, and I just confused the poor fuckers. So, typical problems to use Antler are to parse a configuration file, and there's heaps of projects out there that just have a tiny little Antler grammar for their configuration file. Syntax highlighting, so things like Eclipse use Antler to parse the code that you're writing in and give it all pretty pictures, pretty colours. I hate syntax highlighting. I don't know why people use it. Domain-specific languages, this is a big one. This is where you're generally not working in an IT company, but you're working in a company that makes use of computers a lot. And there's been enough people spending their time solving problems by computer that they've got their own language that describes their own problem in a computery language. What tends to happen is these languages are parsed in a very organic fashion. And this just means it's very difficult to it's both difficult to debug the parser. It's also generally not an easy parser to use. And if you want to add features to the language, it's generally quite painful. A lot of places use Antler generator stuff for an interpreter. It lends itself well to taking a language file and making an intermediate form, which you can traverse continuously, so that you can take a little control scripting language and plug it into your project so you can have plugins and stuff. Translation, so going from one language to another. Obviously it's simpler to go from one procedural language to another procedural language than from something like Fortran to Java, but these things are all doable. One of my pet projects at the moment is going from Fortran to Python. Whew. Fortran, yeah. Please, people, whenever you're designing a language, do it from the parser level. If the computer can't solve it, you can't solve it. Transformation. This is really interesting stuff where you're tweaking the input a little bit. So commonly doing stuff where you're parsing Doxygen comments or your own Pragma stuff that you're putting in. Were you doing aspect-oriented programming, where you want to say, every time we enter this function, I want to do something over here, and every time we exit a function, we want to do something over there. And Antler's very useful for that sort of stuff. It can also be used as a compiler front-end, where you're actually just parsing your input language, get it into some intermediate form, and then do your compiler stuff with it. It's possible now that you can also use it for the back end, because we've actually just about closed the loop and we can make Antler eat its own dog food. that's quite theoretical at the moment. And yeah, just looking at GCC and just how long they've taken to change their intermediate formats, it's going to be painful, but it's quite doable. Who uses Antler? Because it's VSD licensed, lots of people use Antler and they don't bother to tell us. So it's one of those hidden projects. Some obvious users are Hibernate. They're the guys that read relational stuff and no, they take objects and turn it into databases. I don't do objects or databases. IntelliJ, which is another one of these fancy IDE editors, which does syntax highlighting everywhere. Sun uses Antler a lot for its internal stuff. They're very big on generating code, which is sensible for them. And there's been a couple of features that Terence is working on at the moment, which is specifically for Sun. Eclipse also uses Antler like nuts. I believe if you download Eclipse at the moment, I think there are three different versions of Antler inside it. So, AV guys, could I get some water at some point in time? I have a little, but eventually I'd like some more. So Antler generates easy to follow code. That's a lie. It produces code which is slightly easy to follow. So you've got your inputs, which you can make look like these nice syntax graphs. And what Bison will do is it'll make a table with lots of ones and zeros and negative ones, and that's your code. And if you're trying to debug that, you're hosed. Antler will actually generate an A function, and a B function, and a C, and a D function. And you've actually got quite a reasonable chance of following the generated Antler code. One of the very nice things about Antler is that it has multiple generation targets. So your grammar you can write a grammar to parse your configuration file format or your interpreter language, whatever, but you can generate a parser in Python, in C, in Java, in Perl, all the C dialects, so C, C++, C#. Some poor guy's writing an ActionScript one. There's an Oberon one. Who knows Oberon? Yeah, I thought so. Thank you very much, Liam. There's also a PHP one, which is in the works. That would have been great at OSDC. It's because you're sort of chatting away and then you say PHP and everyone's lights go up. Great. So the first thing that the computer scientist wants to know about Antler is what is its parsing strength. So it doesn't actually have one that you'll find in a textbook, which basically means that everyone poo-poos it. So Bison, apart from a few things, there's LL and there's LR. LL is simple and humans can follow it. LR, but it's weak. LR is strong, but humans can't follow it. Antler implements something called LL star. Bison actually implements something that's kind of close to LARN. But that's just because of the feature set that they've got. But it essentially holds true that Bison is more powerful than Antler. No question about it. But if you can't pick up the really heavy gun, you can't use it. Sorry? Yes. So the essential thing with LL stuff is you start from the left and you go right. And you're going from top to the bottom. So if you've got a function that takes a few arguments.
Is there any chance you can put a light on at the front?
Mr. AV, Is that the right one? I can randomly press buttons with the best of them. So if you've got a function called fun, it takes int a and a char b. Now, we'll call this a declaration rather than an actual definition. So if you're parsing this in LL, you'll see the identifier fun, you'll see the identifier open bracket, int a, char b, yada yada yada. And as you're going along, you don't have any idea until you hit that semicolon whether or not you're dealing with a function declaration or a definition. So an LL parser makes that kind of difficult. There are stronger forms of LL parsing, like LL1 and LL2, 3 to N, where you have a look ahead, where you can see from where you're currently looking, you can see ahead a certain number of characters or tokens. But in the general case, we can just keep adding. So if, for example, we had an LL3 parser, where we could see three tokens ahead, it still wouldn't be enough to see that semicolon. And you need a general case, because it doesn't matter how big a LL parser we have, we can just add more arguments to that function, and you can't see ahead to know what to do. So that's why Terence has got the LL star language. And at generation time, it will have a look at your grammar and work out how much look ahead you'll need. And obviously it'll pick the smallest look ahead that your grammar will need. And sometimes that will be an infinite amount of look ahead. So depending on how you write grammar, sometimes you will need to go right up to the end of your input file to figure out what the hell's going on. That would be bad though. Antler has very nice error reporting and error recovery. It's good enough that if you are writing your function and you accidentally miss off your closing bracket or your opening bracket or a semicolon or something, as long as it can pick up from the next line what's going on, it will say expected semicolon here and just continue going along. It's good enough that you can actually have it as part of your human interface. Like, obviously, if your program's a GUI program, that might not be good enough, but for a CLI guy like myself, that's just fine. So it's a combined lecture and parser generator. So from one input file, you can generate both your lecture and your parser. Antler is an interesting tool in that you can go all the way from hacky scripts right up to sort of middling level compilers, all with the same set of tools. So you can sort of have a play with something and see if it's interesting, and then reuse that work right up to the point where you can actually charge money for it. It's particularly good with the Python front end, because the Python stuff that we generate, we actually have, so it's we sort of generate something equivalent to the Perl interpreter, where if you have a Perl script and you just put file names on the end of the arguments, or you redirect the input, the Perl handler will do nice stuff with it. We kind of do that with the Perl stuff, with the Python stuff. So you give it a grammar, generates some Python parsers and stuff, and there's some boilerplate code there that will take input files, or it'll take standard input, or it'll take a networking socket. And it's really, really nice to do hacky stuff with that. Something that's a little bit different to Bison is that part of Antler is a runtime library. So data structures and things that you don't find. Because we're generating parsers for different sets of languages, you would like to have the same set of data structures across all those. So when you're generating a new target, for example, so if you're writing a PHP target, you've also got to write some data structures for PHP. So with Python, most of this is trivial because you've got such a great set of data structures already that you're really just writing some simple wrapper things. For things like C, where you don't really have anything, you've got to write a lot of that from scratch. So, basic parser design. The whole idea of this talk is to get people interested in moving away from regular expressions. I use regexes all the time, but there's a lot of problems where it can be much easier to solve and much saner to solve with a true parser. So, there's two parts to parsing, lexing and parsing. Lexing is where you take your input file and you break it up into little chunks called tokens. And typically, those tokens are separated by whitespace, so spaces, tabs, new lines, but there are all sorts of different ways of doing that sort of stuff. So I'll show you an example a little further on. The reason that there are two parts to parsing is that computers, almost universally, I'm sure there's some wacky architecture out there that's not quite true for, but almost universally, checking for equality between numbers is faster than checking for equality between strings. So you're doing your parsing and you want to know, does this string int look like this other string int? The lexing stage, it turns every string of int into a number. And so you just say 3001 equals 3001. And that's almost always faster than str int equals str int. That's a very general decision that almost always works. For most parsing problems, it's the actual reading in of your input that will take most of your time. The actual parsing input of figuring out the validity of your input, because it's not doing any I/O, is generally faster. They're not always true. So, two parts to parsing. The lexing, which takes your string, turns it into a stream of tokens. The parsing takes your tokens and does something with it. So, I think I've done that one. So, left to right, right to right, look ahead, yep. So, a typical Antler program, it'll take an input of a string and it'll have different types of outputs. Sometimes it'll just be a Boolean output. Was the input correct? So, was the C program syntactically correct? Sometimes you just want a token stream where you'll just want the input broken up into different tokens. And an example of that is if you've got a paper, for example, and you're just looking for all of the references in that paper. And a lot of the times the references will have to be properly formatted, and you can break up your paper into two types of token, references and non-references. And you might just be interested in finding all the references in your papers. Another sort of output is a tree, where you take your flat stream of characters and numbers and turn them into a semantic tree, which includes the semantic information of your content. So not just the look, but what it actually means. Antler has a thing called templates, string templates. So this, it's the same idea as like a HTML template, where you've got the basic template and you just fill in some features. And that's the actual way that Antler outputs different languages. We've got a template for how a parser looks across all the different languages, and then we just populate that with little bits of target language specific stuff. And you might, again, just want to output a string. So you might want to read in your C input, parse it, figure out all the bits, and then you just might want to tweak things. So, for example, you might want to go from camel case to underscores in all of your identifiers. You might want to add some comments to things. I've seen one guy that does stuff where he takes his track database and appends comments to the source code where, this section of code was modified by this particular track number. And He does that just before he ships. So when he's out in the field debugging something, he knows who to ring because they've broken his code in. So that's the first sort of thing that you end up doing. And now we start to get to trickier stuff. This is not quite the released version yet. There's a couple of builds out there where you've already parsed your input. You've got a tree structure, so it's very sparse, it's very simple. It contains just the information you need to actually understand your problem. And you can actually get Antler to parse trees. And two things you can do with that is go from a tree to a template again, or you can optimize trees. So you can do tree rewriting. So you can do sort of stuff where you can, for example, constant folding. If you're walking down an expression tree and you realize that everything you're seeing is like 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 2, you can fold that up and, you know, whatever I said, you can fold it up to a single constant 5. Now that stuff's a little bit new and it will most likely change and improve over time, but you can do that sort of stuff. So one of the things that is a common thing for parsing programming languages is that they have variables, and these variables are declared in certain scopes. So you have function A, which has a function B, C, that declares a V1, that one declares a V1 as well, and that one declares a V2. And if you're in the code that's here, and you refer to the variable V1, you generally speaking want that one. But if you're in the V2 one, and you refer to the variable V1, you generally want that one. And that's such a common requirement for parsing languages that there's a little bit of built-in support to Antler for having stacks of variable name hashes. Island grammars, this is where you've got one language inside another language, so you've got HTML and PHP inside of it, you've got C and Doxygen inside of it, that sort of stuff. And that's essentially where you're flicking between two different parsers. Fuzzy matching is where you basically turn off all the error reporting and you give it a document that might contain things that you're interested in, like HTTP URLs. You just want a document to grab out all the HTTP URLs, and as it's parsing along things, it will find natural language sentences that it doesn't know what it is, and instead of reporting an error and kind of halting after the 8,000th word that wasn't in the grammar, it'll just mute those errors and go on. So in the very next released version, which should have been happening yesterday, but I was sleeping, we'll have tree rewriting. So hopefully this will make it easier to do tree optimization-y type tasks in your grammar. One of the things that's currently working is grammar importation. This is where you can have your grammar split up into three or four little files and do an import, and it all makes sense in the outer grammar. That was far more complicated than I thought it would be. And one of the things that Terence is doing for Sun at the moment is AST error nodes. So normally when you're parsing something, you get an error. You sort of want to stop parsing at that point. You just want to give the line and the file number, the line and the column number, and just say there's an error here. Sun, for some reason, want this thing where they do want to parse a configuration file and get a useful tree out of it, but if there's some error in the configuration file, they still want to parse the rest of the tree. So that's kind of new and kind of dodgy, if you ask me. Antler's not without its problems. It has some Lexing idiosyncrasies where you occasionally have to do too much work to do things that sound like they should be trivial and obvious. But because of the number of bug reports that we've had about this issue, we're slowly changing Terence's mind about things. At the moment, both the Lexa and the parser use essentially the same underlying code base to do the work. And Terence loves this because there's no, if you fix a Lexing bug, you fix a parsing bug. That's great. Except that they're solving two different problems. This is what we're trying to get Terence to understand. That, sometimes you need the combi, sometimes you need the motorbike. And we're trying to, slowly we're getting him to see that Antler should be doing more with the Lexing work for us. Documentation is a bit interesting at the moment. The book is great, but it's already out of date, of course, except for the PDF version. The wiki is good, but it can be hard to find things on. The mailing list is great. You get very responsive people there. I'm very much looking forward to working on the how-to, the cookbook, wiki and book. I think that'll be much more useful than this. Because these are the sort of tools that, once you write the grammar, once you forget your problem, you don't want to have to go back to it again. There are very few people that are sort of steeped in compiler and parser theory and want to stay that way. You want to write your grammar, parse it, and then go on and actually do the real problem. So I think a cookbook solution is much better there. All right. So, now we get on to the examples. So, how many people here have got the Antler stuff set up and are going to follow through with me? Sweet. Sorry? Yes, on the wiki. So, if you go to the tutorial page on the wiki. So, the wiki, unfortunately, doesn't like tar files, so I had to rename the tar file to be a PDF file so it would be happy with it. So just rename the PDF to a tar.bz file. But basically I'm just going to go through those examples here. And the fewer people who follow through with me is probably the better, because what will happen is you'll come across the GUI bugs that I've managed to work around. So I'll make it look really slick up here and you guys will find all the bugs. So. Java. How do you do this again? I wish. Okay, so. Alright, so. Talk tutorial. Okay. So I go minus jar and works. Crap. Boom. I'm doing Steve Jobs and saying boom. And look at my poor little CPU chugging away. Alright, so this is AntlerWorks. It's got syntax highlighting. Yay, AntlerWorks. Alright, so I will open up conf.file.g. This is a really simple configuration file parser. It parses things like A equals 1, B equals food. And that's about it. So it's a nice, really small example, but it can be a good introduction to move on to further things. Yep. That one there. Yeah, so that one there means that we have to start the identifier with either an underscore or a letter, but the follow-on, laser pointer, the follow-on can contain numbers. So that first bit there forces us to have a letter or an underscore, but after that you can have that. Yes. So this is why AntlerWorks is really good for these tutorial things, because it has all this graphic stuff. And I just sit there and go, goo, isn't that nice? Meanwhile, my 20-ton truck is doing loop-de-loops out the corner. So there's a syntax diagram for what that actually means. And why it doesn't auto-zoom, I don't know. So we've got three parts to this configuration file here. We start off with the grammar. And there's several different keywords that you can pass to that. You can say it's an Alexa grammar, which will just make Alexa. You can say a parser grammar, or the default, just a grammar, and it'll make both Alexa and a parser. You can also have a tree grammar, which means that it'll parse trees. There's two sections here. Now, by convention, the first part of the file goes second, and the second part of the file goes first. Just the way it is, folks. So the rules down the bottom, ident, number, and WS, which stands for white space, they are our Lexer rules. Now, Lexer rules start with an uppercase letter. By convention, they're all uppercase. If I ever see anyone who starts it who has a mixed case identifier, I will kill you. I'm trying to get Terence to change that, so it's not convention, it's actually the rules. So, the first one here is a number, and all it does is takes anything from a 0 to a 9. The plus is your normal regex thing, so it means one to many of them. The golden rule with Antler token Lexa rules is never write a rule which can take zero input, because it'll just hang. Always make sure that your Lexer rules will chew up at least one character. You don't have to worry about that with the parsing rules, but you've got to worry about with the Lexing rules. So it turns out that you can... Yes. So the machinery that we use to evaluate these things, most of the time you can tell if it's going to chew up zero characters. But there are a couple of corner cases where it's really hard. And at the moment, instead of capturing 90% of it and then saying we capture them all of it, we're not capturing any of it. So we're closer to the truth paradigm than the want paradigm, I suppose you could say. This is an identifier. So this will match foo, match under foo, and under foo 1. But it won't match one foo, because like a sensible, there's a number of things that will come up time and time again. There are reasons that identifiers don't start with numbers. This is so you can differentiate between numbers and identifiers. And this is the reason why if you ever design a language for yourself, always start using the parser from day dot, so you don't make mistakes that will hurt you. We are asked to do grammars where the termination symbol is a dot. What the fuck is that? You know, is it 1.2 with a message of A and params of C and E and B and quite literally, you've got to go away for some of these things. And A is actually a method which takes two arguments, and then foobar is a new line, like it's a new command. And yeah, like if it's hard for the human to figure out exactly what's going on just by instantly looking at it, computer's never going to do it well. So if you write a configuration file or a parser, do it from the grammar. So, we've got our three rules there. This one catches Windows new lines, Unix new lines, and spaces. If I was being really clever, I'd also capture all the Unicode white space stuff. But like a lot of things in life, Unicode's just one of those things I don't do. Now, this is the important bit here. Channel equals hidden. So, when you generate code with Antler, what it does is generates real code that you can actually read. If you put something in curly brackets, it will actually copy that code into your generated parser. And so when it's parsed a chunk of white space, it will actually run that code channel equals hidden. Now, what that actually means is, you've got Alexa, you've got your parser, and it's sending tokens on different channels. Now, it's only listening to one of these channels at any given time, and that's the default channel. So here, ID, so idents, numbers, will get through to the channel, and the parser will see those and do something. The white space tokens, which will be on a hidden channel, the parser will see them, but it will ignore them. So what this means is that in our rules for assign, we don't have to say idents, possibly a white space, equals possibly a white space, value. All that the parser sees is, because we've said the white space go to this different channel, is the parser just sees ident equals value. This is a really nice feature. And it means that you can do things like doxgen comments, where you're parsing, so pretend that that's a part of a C line, and there's a comment up above it. Normally, your comments will get put to the hidden channel. So you'll have a little rule there which parses the comments, puts it in a hidden channel. So what you can do is, in your action code, I'm my own theremin. What you can do in that action code is, once you've passed that assign statement, you can back up in your token list until you see a white space token. And although you haven't had to worry about the, until you see a comment token, you haven't had to worry about parsing the white space, but it's still available for you if you want it. And what happens quite often is that you'll have one channel for tokens that you're interested in, one channel for white space, which you're generally not interested in, and then another one for comments. And you can have as many channels as you want that make sense for you. And often, if you're doing that sort of stuff, you'll break up your comments into two tokens, one which are in your funky format for pragmas, and one which is not in your funky format for pragmas. So it's a very flexible way of splitting things up. And the other thing here is this literal equal sign. You don't have to go and write a token rule for things if you don't want to. This is all part of the hacky, let's play with it a bit and see what happens nature of Antler. So I could just as easily do that. But that there is entirely equivalent. And don't ask, because it's tricky. What happens if you've got both of them there? It is a little bit tricky, but most of the time it'll do the right thing. But that can be very useful, like semicolons at the end of statements and stuff. It's often just clearer just having those in the parsers rather than having a new token. So if I generate the code there, excellent, no errors, one do bar. Does anyone know how to increase the font size of an RXVT or an Xterm? Ooh. No, sorry. I mustn't be. Is that easy enough to see anyway?
Yeah.
Okay, good, good. My eyes are going, so I do tend to have a larger font size. So, if we go into Antler tutorial, talks. So, we had confile.blah. So, the confile.g, that's our grammar. The tokens file. Is a list of all of the tokens. So there's ident, white space, and number, which we hand wrote, and then it's made one called equals for that literal that we had. Yeah. Yes, yes. So there's a few tokens that it takes up. So there's EOF, which takes up a number, and there's also tree tokens, which is up, down, left and right, or something like that. So it uses up a few internally. But you should never have to worry about the numbers, you should only have to worry about the actual enumerations of them. One of the things it does is it splits up the lexer and the parser a little bit. So if you have a look at comp file under G, this should be the lexer rules. So what Antler's done here is it's taken just the lexer rules out of the parser, put it in its own configuration file. Because although you can, and the most common way of using Antler is to have everything in one file, there are times where you do want to share a lexer or a parser around. So it also lets that happen. So if I have a look at lexer file. So this is the actual code that it's generating. And I'll try and follow some of this through. So this is going to match a number. It helpfully gives you some lines of code there to tell you what part of the grammar input file this code was created for. It does a few things that you don't really have to worry about too much. So the alternative numbers, that's just Antler working out where, how much look ahead you need basically to figure out where a number starts and stops. LA stands for look ahead, and here it's just doing a look ahead of one character. So it sees a number and it can decide if it's part of an identifier just by one character at a time. If the number is greater than 0, greater than or equal to 0, but smaller than or less than 9, it decides it's a good alternative. And matches it, so it actually consumes the input. Rather than just looking at it, it actually decides it likes it. And what it does here is if it hits something that it doesn't like, it'll throw an exception, which will get caught later on. And it makes sure that it does that in a loop. So that's the plus part of our identifier rule. So here we've got the white space rule. So looks ahead at one character. If it's a slash R, it's happy. If it's a slash N, it's happy. If it's a space, it's a happy. Otherwise, it ain't happy. There's a reason that it does the alts rather than just a direct switch, but that's a little bit later on. But then it does a switch on the alternatives and actually consumes the input. And that code there is the code that we had where we actually said channel equals hidden.
Shouldn't that be on all three?
Yep. I just noticed that myself.
No, that's what you asked for.
Oh. Let's try that. No, you're right. That is actually what I asked for. Yes. So it'll generate different codes for ORs or states, but that's actually obviously much better. So a chocolate to the front person. AB guys, got any chocolates? So the parser is quite similar as well. So here we're matching probably the assign function is the easiest one to do. So here we're matching an assign statement. We're doing a few things here where we're working out what tokens we want to see and what tokens we don't want to see. So what tokens will we be happy to match and what we won't be happy to match. So there's a set of values that we're happy to see and a set of values that we're not happy to see. So we've got value there. Right, so we match anything that is in an identifier or that follows an identifier. We match anything that is an assignment, which is just the equal sign. And then we call the function value there, which is that one there. And then value is either an ident or a number. So it goes hunting for an identifier or a number. So it generates recursive descent compilers, but it generates them with follow states and look ahead states and the error recovery that allows you to do nice error reporting. So one of the nice things with this GUI DUI is that we can do stuff like fits. Meant to go ooh at that point in time. It sounded a bit forced, honestly. So what we've got here is the parse tree. So this is all of the things that we've parsed. Yes. So we can do that, and it'll have exactly the same, because all of the white space is the same thing. No. That sounded like an arsehole, actually. Ah, yes, Anthony. So what we've got there, it looks like it parsed okay, but this is one of the bugs in AntlerWorks where it doesn't actually tell you EOF errors. So you've got the parse tree there, so you've got every bit of detail you could possibly want. So you've got your conf rule. Now I wonder if that actually follows. So you can do things like if I do meant to be showing me highlight position F3. It's meant to be showing where those tokens came from, but it's not doing that for me. So that's just a basic interpreter. So it doesn't quite do everything that you want it to do, but it's really nice for playing around with grammars. So if we go so the next one we'll have a look at is C -.g. What's it complaining about? Oh, it's actually showing where the DFAs are, right? So this is C -.g. So it's a C-like language, but horribly, horribly small. So it's useful because it points out all of the things that you can do with Antler, but it's not actually useful as a grammar itself. So it's fairly similar. Look, I even fixed that bug there. So you've got your white line, white space rules, int rules, ID rules, so very similar rules to the previous example. We have a few more things here. So we've got a program. The program has a bunch of declarations of variables and then statements to do things with those variables. We've got semicolon literals here, so implicit tokens. We've got function declarations that take parameters. We only understand ints or chars as parameters. We've got a few different types of expressions there. We can do A equals B or A is less than B. We don't do all of them, just for convenience. So probably the easiest thing to do is show you the input that it can take. Thank you. Right, so that's the entire bloody parse tree for that big thing. So let's just look a little bit closer at a few parts. So you've got a declaration which contains a variable. It's a type char. It's C, and then has an ending semicolon. So that little tree bit there is just that first line. Then you've got X, very similar. Then you've got foo, which is a type int. It's got a bunch of formal parameters, which are that, and yada yada, yada yada, all the way across. Now, that is a tree format, but there's a lot of superfluous stuff in there that you don't need to actually convey the information that that's a function.
Can I just
give you a few minutes? Yeah. Okay, sure. All right. Elevator music. So as we're going along, if anyone's got any questions and stuff, please feel free to stop and ask. Oh, that was the input file. Input. So I put a new tarball up just this morning. Depends on the language that you're using. Antler is much more suited to so the trade-off is much more towards developer time than computer time. So there are features that will make defining your